This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Indonesian workers and residents were assessing the damage on Wednesday of a 5.6 magnitude earthquake that killed at least 268 people. More than 1,000 people were injured in Monday's tremor on the island of Java, and many remain missing. While the magnitude would typically be expected to cause light damage to buildings and other structures, experts say proximity to fault lines, the shallowness of the quake, and inadequate infrastructure that cannot withstand earthquakes all contributed to the damage. Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro is contesting his defeat in the October election and calling on the electoral authority to annul votes cast on more than half of electronic voting machines used. Bolsonaro cited a software bug that independent experts have said didn't affect results. The leader of Bolsonaro's Liberal Party and an auditor hired by the party said they were asking the electoral authority to invalidate all votes cast on the machines. Ukrainians needing basic services if Russia knocks out power stations and other facilities this winter can turn to special so-called invincibility centers, President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Tuesday. Thousands of centers spread across the country will offer electricity, heat, water, internet service, mobile phone connections, and a pharmacy free of charge and around the clock. Russian attacks have knocked out power for long periods to up to 10 million consumers at a time. Ukraine's national power grid operator said on Tuesday the damage was colossal. This is VOA News. Four people have been detained over a fire at an industrial trading company in central China that killed 38 people. Authorities say the fire on Monday was caused by welding sparks that ignited cotton cloth being stored at the facility. The mayor was quoted in state media saying two of the company's employees and two from a clothing firm were detained. An accountant has testified that former U.S. President Donald Trump claimed a decade of huge tax losses, AP correspondent Norman Hall reports.
His longtime accountant testified that Donald Trump reported losses on his tax returns every year for a decade, including nearly $700 million in 2009 and $200 million in 2010. Donald Bender, a partner at the firm that handled Trump's personal tax returns, said Trump's reported losses from 2009 to 2018 included net operating losses from some of the many businesses he owns through the Trump Organization. The company is charged with helping some top executives avoid income taxes on compensation they got in addition to their salaries. If convicted, the company could be fined more than $1 million. The former president is not charged in the case. I'm Norman Hall.
Argentines in Buenos Aires watched in disbelief as their country lost their inaugural World Cup match against Saudi Arabia on Tuesday. Hundreds of people dressed in blue and white met at a public park very early in the morning to watch the match on a giant screen. Saudi Arabia scored one of the biggest World Cup upsets ever by beating Lionel Messi's Argentina 2-1 Tuesday. Updated COVID-19 boosters offer increased protection against new variants in people who have previously received up to four doses of the older vaccine. A real-world study in the United States showed the study of over 360,000 people offers the first evidence that the new vaccines by Pfizer and Moderna provide better protection compared to the original shots. The suspect in the mass shooting that killed five people and wounded 17 at an LGBTQ nightclub in the U.S. state of Colorado has been transferred to jail from the hospital where he was in police custody, police said on Tuesday. Police held the 22-year-old on initial charges, including five counts of first-degree murder and bias crimes. Find more on our website, including our podcasts, Flashpoint Ukraine and Flashpoint Iran, at voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today's Wednesday, November 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Indonesian rescue workers race to reach people trapped in a rubble a day after a devastating earthquake.
The death toll in Monday's Indonesian earthquake has topped more than 250 people, according to the authorities. They warn it may still rise. Now, rescuers are racing against the clock to find the missing.
The White House expresses, quote, grave concern, quote, about intensifying crackdown in Iran on peaceful protesters.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre during a Tuesday briefing also told reporters the United States stands with the women of Iran and others demonstrating there for basic human rights.
And the White House expresses a great concern about intensifying crackdown in Iran protesters, and the Supreme Court clears way for handover of former President Donald Trump's tax returns. We'll have those stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Indonesian rescue workers were racing on Tuesday to reach people still trapped in rubble a day after an earthquake devastated a West Java town, killing at least 252 people and injuring hundreds, as officials warn the death toll may rise. Rachel Judah has more.
The death toll in Monday's Indonesian earthquake has topped more than 250 people, according to the authorities. They warn it may still rise. Now, rescuers are racing against the clock to find the missing. In Sianjur, a town near the epicenter, residents like 45-year-old Zianuddin are reporting absent members of their family.
At least six of my relatives are still unaccounted for, three adults and three children.
Zainuddin's family all lived in the same residential area. It's now been bulldozed by a landslide that followed the tremors.
This is where all my family are. My uncle, my little brother, their houses are there. The houses of my elder and younger brothers have collapsed. The houses that you can see from here are mine and my uncle's, and only one section is standing. The other parts have all been damaged.
An abandoned school nearby showed signs its occupants had left in a hurry when the disaster struck. Indonesia's disaster agency said many of the earthquake's victims were children who were still at school when the earthquake hit at 1 p.m. on Monday. Authorities say rescue efforts in the mountainous area were hampered by roads blocked by landslides, power outages, and over 100 aftershocks.
That's Rachel Judah of Reuters. The White House is saying it is gravely concerned about intensifying crackdown in Iran on peaceful protesters. They have taken to the streets daily for the past 2 months since a young woman died in custody who had been arrested for improperly covering her head. This story from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre during a Tuesday briefing also told reporters the United States stands with the women of Iran and others demonstrating there for basic human rights, noting hundreds of protesters have been killed by authorities.
We condemn the Iranian authorities that have arrested and fired on peaceful protesters, the targeted arrest of journalists, human rights activists, teachers, and cultural figures, and the continued disruption of the internet inside Iran.
The spokesperson added the United States will continue to use all available tools to pursue accountability for those responsible for the crackdown, but noted there is nothing new to announce at this point. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Tuesday the administration's relationship with Saudi Arabia was still under review despite the administration's ruling that the Saudi crown prince has immunity from a lawsuit over the murder of Jamal Khashoggi.
We received a request from a federal court that had litigation before it via the Justice Department to ascertain our opinion on his status, and we conveyed an opinion based on long-standing legal practice that, given his position as a head of state, head of government, or foreign minister, that he was, as a legal matter, entitled to immunity. This is a determination that we've made in dozens, hundreds of cases over the years.
That's U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The Supreme Court has cleared the way for the handover of former President Donald Trump's tax returns to a congressional committee after a three-year legal fight. The Democratic-controlled House Ways and Means Committee had asked for 6 years of tax returns for Trump and some of his businesses from 2015 to 2020. The court's order Tuesday leaves no legal obstacle in the way. The Treasury Department refused to provide the records during Trump's presidency, but the Biden administration said federal law is clear that the committee has the right to examine any taxpayers' returns, including the president's. Lower courts agreed, rejecting Trump's claim that the committee only wanted the documents to make them public. Turkey says it will continue its military operations against U.S.-backed Syrian Kurdish forces after blaming Kurdish separatists for a recent bombing in Istanbul. Ankara says it's ready to launch a Syrian cross-border operation, but faces growing international calls for restraint. For VOA, Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
International pressure is growing on Ankara as Moscow joins calls for restraint as Turkish forces continue their military operations against the YPG, a Syrian Kurdish militia. But Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan warned Tuesday a land operation could be imminent.
Bu teröristleri kimlerin himaye ettiğini, silahlandırdığını...
We have been bearing down on terrorists for a few days with our planes, cannons and guns, Erdogan said in the speech. God willing, we will root out all of them as soon as possible, together with our tanks and our soldiers. Ankara claims the YPG facilitated this month's fatal bombing in Istanbul, a charge the group denies. Turkish Defense Minister Hulusi Akar, speaking Monday, warned there would be no let-up in its attacks. He said Turkey would make them pay for all the crimes they have committed today and before. They will pay for them, the defense minister said. Akar said 184 militants had been neutralized in its ongoing assault. Monday, tensions escalated further, with Ankara claiming three civilians were killed in cross-border rocket attacks from Syrian Kurdish militants. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan Monday said a ground assault into Syria was possible. Asla Aydintashbash of the Brookings Institution in Washington says such displays are not unexpected with elections approaching in June.
It's not uncommon to see a cross-border operation in election years, but also Turkey has long wanted to do this. And I think elections are also introducing a timeline that works for the government. And also Turkey feels its hand is strong.
Washington has warned Ankara against any cross-border operation. The United States backs the YPG in its war against the Islamic State group. However, Defense Minister Akar dismissed Washington's concerns, calling for an end to U.S. support of the YPG, saying it's affiliated with the PKK, which is fighting the Turkish state for greater minority rights. Aydın Selcem is a former senior Turkish diplomat who served in the region and is now a regional analyst for Mediascope, a news portal.
Time and again, Ankara, Erdogan and other actors like the Defense Minister Akar made clear Turkey is not happy with the U.S. equipping and training the YPG, which is the direct extension of PKK in Syria. And Ankara considers that as the main problem.
But in rare common ground with Washington, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov Tuesday called on Turkey for restraint. The Iranian-backed militia in Syria has also warned Ankara against any military operations into Syria. With Turkish forces already controlling a large swathe of northern Syria from previous operations against Syrian Kurdish militants, analysts say Tehran is concerned with growing Turkish influence in Syria. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Thank you, Dorian. Russia and Myanmar are the only two states to have used anti-personnel mines this year, according to the latest annual report from the International Campaign to Ban Landmines. Neither country is among the 164 states that are party to the 1997 Mine Ban Treaty. Every year, thousands of people are killed or maimed by mines, many of them children, as Henry Ridgewell reports.
In a hospital in Lviv, newlyweds Oksana Balandina and Viktor Vasilyev shared their first dance. In March, the 23-year-old nurse stepped on an anti-personnel landmine left by Russian forces in her home city of Lysychansk. Balandina is among the more than 270 people who have been killed or maimed by anti-personnel landmines in Ukraine this year. Invading Russian forces have mined vast areas since their February invasion. Ukraine's Deputy Interior Minister Mary Akopian spoke to reporters on a recent visit to the liberated region around Kherson.
We have more than 200,000 square kilometers, which is not checked yet and not demined.
The report says Russia has deployed mines by hand, dropped from aircraft and via artillery and rocket fire. Mary Wareham is a co-editor of the Landmine Monitor 2022 report at Human Rights Watch.
Russian forces have used at least seven types of anti-personnel landmines since the Russian invasion of Ukraine on the 24th of February. There's also some evidence that improvised victim-activated explosive devices have been used, and those fall under the prohibition of the international treaty banning landmines.
Myanmar's military has used anti-personnel mines for decades. Again, Mary Wareham.
There was some increased use of anti-personnel mines by government forces in Myanmar around telecom towers, pipelines and other energy installations, as well as use by non-state armed groups in that country.
Anti-personnel landmines are still in the ground in at least 60 countries. Globally, there were 5,500 new victims of landmines or explosive remnants during 2021, including over 2,000 deaths. Where the age was recorded, half of those killed or maimed were children. Syria recorded the highest toll, with over 1,200 casualties. In Afghanistan, there were over 1,000 new mine victims. Ahmed Al-Muriai lost his son Murad in January. The 9-year-old stepped on a landmine as he combed the beach for rubbish to sell close to the Yemeni city of Hodeidah. Al-Muriai said, "I wrapped pieces of his body in a blanket and carried it all to the criminal investigation department. I did not wash him or put him in a burial shroud. I just buried pieces of him in a plastic bag." Under the mine ban treaty, 94 states have destroyed more than 55 million landmines from their stockpiles. But in countries around the world, the weapons continue to destroy civilians' lives and limbs long after conflict has abated. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
In other news, shock and sadness engulfed the streets of Buenos Aires as Argentina national team lost 2-1 to Saudi Arabia in its opening match of the World Cup. Fans had awakened early to watch the contest in Qatar, with everyone seemingly convinced it would be an easy victory for a team on a 36-match unbeaten run. Many walked to bakeries in Buenos Aires in blue and white jerseys for breakfast. Cheers were heard in the streets at the kickoff. More noise followed when Lionel Messi scored early and the din of vuvuzelas penetrated the morning air. But an eerie silence soon set in as what was supposed to be an easy match turned challenging and Saudi Arabia rallied with 2 second-half goals. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Ghana's President Nana Akufo-Addo on Tuesday warned that a rampant Islamist insurgency in West Africa's Sahel is threatening to engulf the entire region. Lisa Knox of Reuters reports.
West Africa's Sahel region is under threat from being engulfed by a rampant Islamist insurgency. That's according to Ghana's President Nana Akufo-Addo on Tuesday.
Today, the terrorist groups, emboldened by their apparent success in the region, are seeking new operational grounds, a development that has triggered a southward drift of the menace from the Sahel to coastal West Africa.
Akufo-Addo's comments come as West African leaders and European ministers meet in Ghana as part of the Accra Initiative Security Conference. The aim of the talks is to discuss regional solutions to the spreading insurgency. It comes as foreign troops pull out of Mali, where militants have seized vast swathes of territory. France, Denmark and Ivory Coast are among countries that ended military cooperation with Mali this year over the ruling junta's cooperation with Russian mercenaries, sparking concerns that this will create a security vacuum in an area where groups linked to Al-Qaeda and Islamic State have already branched out, both into Mali's neighbours and also into coastal states south of the Sahel, such as Benin and Togo, which have both seen a rise in attacks in recent years. His European Council President, Charles Michel.
And this situation calls for rapid mobilizations from regional partners and from the entire international community, because your fight against terrorism is our fight too.
Despite efforts to fight insurgents, attacks have increased over the past decade. The violence has killed thousands of people and displaced more than 2.7 million across the Sahel, according to the United Nations. In June, the UN said that over 30 million people in the Sahel will require life-saving assistance and protection in 2022. That's almost 2 million more than the previous year.
That's Louisa Nax of Reuters. The East African community postponed a third round of peace talks between the DRC and rebel groups in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, saying conditions weren't right. The talks by the Seven Nation group have been held in parallel with peace talks in Angola between the presidents of Burundi, the DRC, and Rwanda. Kinshasa has accused Kigali of supporting the M23 rebels in the DRC, which Rwanda denies. Mohamed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa's News Center in Nairobi, Kenya.
The two leaders, Felix Tshisekedi and Kenyan President William Ruto, met a week after Kenya sent some 900 troops as part of the East African Regional Force to eastern Congo to quell the violence and disarm the rebels operating in the area. Ruto reaffirmed his country and the East African Community Regional Bloc's commitment to help Congo build a stable nation.
We are committed under the East Africa community to do whatever it takes to support His Excellency the President, to support the government of DRC and the people of DRC so that we can have peace in this country. It is in our interest collectively and individually that we have a peaceful region.
There are peace talks planned in Angola's capital, where President Tshisekedi is expected to meet Rwandan President Paul Kagame after months of tension between the two neighbors over the rebellious activities in eastern Congo. Kinshasa is accusing Rwanda of supporting the M23 rebel group against its forces, a claim denied by Kigali. Planned talks in Nairobi between the Congolese government and the rebel groups that were scheduled for Monday have been postponed. Belise Kerege, an independent political and security researcher in eastern Congo, says the success of talks between Kinshasa and Kigali can help ease tensions in the eastern part of the country. They should give more attention to the talks in Luanda, and the president should continue to engage the Congolese people inside the country, he says. The president needs to start the peace talks among all the Congolese people, and we know what the Congolese want. The Congo's crisis needs to be solved by the Congolese themselves and their leaders, inside the country, not outside. The resurgence of the rebel group M23 has threatened the peace in eastern Congo and displaced thousands in recent weeks. There is an ethnic component to the fighting in North Kivu. M23 is made up of mainly Tutsis and has accused the Congo government of failing to protect their families against other rebel groups in the region led by Hutus. The group has vowed to continue fighting until they are assured of their safety against other rebel groups and the Congolese army. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
This is Science in a Minute.
Several studies and findings made by spacecraft, rovers, and landers from NASA and other space agencies suggest that some 4.5 billion years ago, Mars had a thick, rich atmosphere and oceans of flowing water on its surface, which could have possibly supported life. A new study published in the journal Science Advances proposes that early in its evolution, the red planet was covered with water, with an average depth of 300 meters. The study, led by researchers at the University of Copenhagen, suggests all of that water came from ice-filled asteroids, which showered the planet for its first 100 million years. Study authors also found that the asteroids brought important biological molecules like amino acids to Mars. Amino acids are one of the important building blocks that make life possible. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is visiting a Western Philippines island province at the edge of the South China Sea to amplify America's support and underline U.S. interest in freedom of navigation in the disputed waters. We'll discuss this and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter, next, a Mideast update. From shaky U.S.-Saudi relations, the politics of the World Cup in Qatar, Iran's crackdown on anti-regime protesters, and its growing military ties with Russia, to the return of Bibi Netanyahu in Israel, we revisit some top stories in the region with experts Ellen Lapson and Hussein Ibish. A Mideast update, next on Encounter, on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chino Duofo in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In early November, North Korea, formerly known as the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or DPRK, launched another barrage of missiles, including a surface-to-air missile that landed a mere 57 kilometers from South Korea, formerly known as the Republic of Korea, or ROK. Another of the missiles launched in early November was an intercontinental ballistic missile the DPRK claims is capable of carrying a nuclear warhead. Pyongyang announced that the launches were practice for a quote-unquote merciless attack on ROK and U.S. targets. Speaking at a United Nations Security Council briefing on the DPRK's missile firings, U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, condemned in the strongest possible terms all recent DPRK missile launches since October 27. She noted that the latest test of an intercontinental ballistic missile is particularly concerning. Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield declared that the DPRK's aggressive behavior is more than just advancing the DPRK's unlawful military capabilities and undermining the global nonproliferation regime. This is also about the DPRK trying to purposely raise tensions and stoke fear in its neighbors. In response to the DPRK's aggressive behavior over the past several months, the United States and the ROK have further deepened their cooperation to bolster their shared security. In July, the United States deployed fifth-generation fighter aircraft to the ROK, and in October, the USS Ronald Reagan Carrier Strike Group redeployed to the Sea of Japan after Pyongyang launched a long-range ballistic missile over Japan. The day after the DPRK's early November missile barrage, U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin and ROK Defense Minister Lee Jong-sup met at the Pentagon for the previously scheduled 54th U.S. Republic of Korea Security Consultative Meeting. The U.S. commitment to defending the ROK is ironclad, said Defense Secretary Austin after the meeting. On the peninsula, he noted, we're returning to large-scale exercises to strengthen our combined readiness and our ability to fight tonight, if necessary. We're committed to building on these efforts to strengthen integrated deterrence and to ensure that this alliance continues to bolster security and stability on the Korean Peninsula and throughout the Indo-Pacific. We will confront the challenges of the future the same way that we have for nearly 70 years, Secretary Austin declared, by standing shoulder to shoulder as proud allies.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.